broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
This is amazing. It's so exciting, and it's great to see all this.
Well, the Taliban try to impose their bizarre religious views.
Teens. It's everybody, but I know teens.
One thing that fascinated me throughout the whole lunch, all I could hear was laughing.
I forgot he was black tonight.
Oh, you are good.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast with a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Where truth is our bitch and where we go through the looking glass every night, going places where most talk shows, all talk shows, would not dare trod. 877-876-PHIL. A survey tests Americans' knowledge of religion, and guess who came out on top? You'll be surprised, or maybe not. Bob Beckel gets into it with a guest on Fox Business. PhilHendryShow.com, the strong right arm of the radio show, so get a backstage pass and check out our archives, our live streaming video right now of the show, right now. You can see how we are performing our show night in, night out over there at PhilHendryShow.com, the greatest value in the history of entertainment. Phil Hendry here in our news hour with, what's your name again?
Bud.
I'm just kidding around. Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard with us. Robert, how are you?
I'm doing good. I want to hear about Bob Beckel, because the guy, he's a liberal, and he said he's going to kick a woman's ass.
Yeah, I heard about that. That's bitching.
And I don't know if he said he was going to kick a woman's ass.
Yeah, he did. He said, you're a woman. Watch out.
Well, hold on for a minute, man. Bob Beckel is the former campaign manager for, I think he was the campaign manager for Walter Mondale. So he did a great job there. Wow.
Wait, what happened?
What happened? Walter Mondale, well, nobody was going to get Walter Mondale elected. So I think he was the campaign manager for Walter Mondale in the early 80s when Ronald Reagan was running against Walter Mondale. So forget it, you know. It was the middle of the 80s. It was Wall Street. It was Level 42. I don't know what the hell it was.
What was that?
What was what?
Well, Level 42.
That was like a band that was out then.
Was that like Dale's had a tear, or what was it called, Tears for Fear?
Tears for Fears was a band then, yeah.
What about like Led Zeppelin?
Led Zeppelin was the 70s.
What about Huey Lewis and the...
You guys shut up about it. I'm not going to give you a whole education on the 80s, okay? Yes, I'm giving the word now from our esteemed colleague, Mr. Rance. It's something that you two clowns should have been doing. Yes, he was the campaign manager for Mondale. Thank you, Jason.
Well, you were talking to me. I couldn't look it up, and you told me to.
You're supposed to pick up on these things, man. If I'm rapping about it, I think he was. If you see me rolling my eyes, okay.
Yeah, well, you roll your eyes and scratch your balls.
Will you shut up?
You do.
Yeah, but I don't want you to. Anyway. Bob Beckel rocks. Money Rocks Ground Zero Moss Debate. The name of the show is Money Rocks, and Eric Bolling is the host. It's on Fox Business News. And I guess this one had a lot of people a titter and a twitter because Bob Beckel, who is, as I say, a liberal, and this very dumb woman named Pamela Geller, she's stupid. Because anybody that says Islam is a intolerant ideology, a radical, hateful, intolerant, or poisonous ideology, anyone that says that, I think by definition, is stupid. And I'll tell you why. You can take a look at the Bible the same way some of these brain surgeons take a look at the Quran, and you can say Christianity is a violent, rotten, sad religion. All right, great. Everybody knows that, right? So why wouldn't we apply the same knowledge to an individual who takes the Quran and says, well, this is in there, this is in there? Why don't we do that? Because the fact is that both religions probably have a lot to recommend them and a lot to not recommend them. Why do I say that? Because they're religions. It doesn't give them any particular province. It doesn't give them anything other than the fact they are protected by our Constitution in this country. I don't know about any other country. In this country, yeah, we do have a Constitution. And as long as your religion doesn't believe in, like, abusing children, giving drugs to children, torturing or sacrificing animals in an abusive manner, you know, the basic thing. See, this is something people need to get because they don't. Religion has its limits, okay? I saw, by the way, with that girl, what was her name?
Yeah, the girl, she's got to wear a derby.
No, she don't have to wear a derby, man.
Well, she got to wear a new one.
The lady, the woman with the...
They put a derby hat on her.
No, they didn't, man. They made her wear a shawl.
That girl that wanted to wear the shawl, right?
Yeah, but then they put on a derby hat.
No, man, they did not put a derby. They got a new shawl.
Okay, fine. But the point is, she didn't understand what a lot of people don't understand. A lot of Christians don't understand this. This is not just Muslims don't understand this. Christians don't get this. Jews don't get this. There's a limit to your freedom when it comes to your religion. It's not just anything you want to do. Oh, well, religion. No, 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 no. You can't, like that lady that took her kid and didn't want him to have the cancer treatment because of her religious convictions. Guess what? They hunted her ass down and they brought the kid back and they gave him his cancer treatment, whether her religion believed in it or not. Your religion does not give you the right to withhold medical assistance to someone. Does not give you that right. Your religion doesn't give you the right to rape children. Your religion doesn't give you the right to kidnap people. Your religion doesn't give, there's a lot of things that religions do not have the right to do, so there's no unlimited freedom of religion. Now, I could say, hey, there's a religious sect down there in Texas or in Oklahoma or up in Busted Whistle, Montana or something, and they believe that everybody should wear a derby hat, like Bud was saying, and they're forcing even little infants to wear derby hats so they can't see their bottle, and it's just, it's a horrible human situation. It's a human tragedy. And what are you looking at?
I'm trying to find it.
Find what?
The story with a derby hat.
There ain't no story. I'm making it up.
You told me that about a story about a derby hat on a kid.
He was talking about it.
I'm making it up. Looking for the story on the derby hat.
Well, like, you said there's a... That it was a human waste or something.
Human tragedy. In any event, so you can say anything you want about all kinds of religions, man. She would have been in safe territory. I think she would have been in safe water. She simply had said, "I am against the Ground Zero Mosque because this, that, some relatively sensible argument, not about the intolerant ideology." So right away. She's got one foot in the crap with me, anyway, because she argued, and I'm quoting the news story, Beckel was, quote, carrying water for the most radical and intolerant ideology in the world today. Now, carrying water means you're a lackey. It means you are the lapdog. It's a pretty insulting thing to say. Having said that, she's a female, and maybe she thought she could get away with it. And, of course, as a female, she will get away with it because a gentleman cannot surrender the high moral ground and start, getting accusatory or threatening toward a female. Whether you think you have the right or not, Charlie, you ain't never going to win that one. And, Beckel, you blew it. You blew it bad.
I don't know why you're carrying water for the most radical, intolerant ideology in the world today. There have been 20,000 documented radical Islamic attacks since 9/11, each one with the imprimatur of a Muslim cleric.
Yeah, you better be very careful. You're a woman. You better be very careful about saying who I carry water for, because you have no idea what you're talking about. Don't start putting me in the middle of your crap.
Don't you point to me.
I'll point you all I want.
Don't you point to me. You're a misogynist.
You're getting yourself 15 minutes. You get yourself 15 minutes.
You're picking on a bunch of women. You're a woman hater.
David, a woman hater.
Yes, sir.
A woman hater.
Yeah, look how you're talking to me. It's outrageous.
You are nuts.
Yeah, I'm not nuts.
You blew it.
You did, Beckel. People thought that you're going to kick her ass. Let's listen again. Let's listen again as Beckel begins to ball his hand up into a fist. His face turns red. He's looking at this yapping woman sitting across the table, and he's thinking,
"You blew it."
As he's
I don't know why you're carrying water for the most radical, intolerant ideology in the world today. There have been 20,000 documented radical Islamic attacks since 9/11, each one with the imprimatur of a Muslim cleric.
You better be very careful.
Watch
you're
it.
A woman. You better be very
watch
careful
it.
About saying who I carry water for, because you have no idea what you're talking about. Don't start putting me in the middle of your crap.
Don't you point to me.
I'll point you all I want.
You're a misogynist.
You're getting yourself 15 minutes. You give yourself 15 minutes of fame.
You're picking on a bunch of women. You're a woman hater.
A woman hater.
Yes, sir.
A woman hater.
Look how you're talking to me. It's outrageous.
You are nuts.
I'm not nuts.
You are so hot.
So there you go. And remember,
we must be ready all the time for the atomic bomb.
You blew it.
That was Bob Beckel. So he's
a mess.
He's a mess. I understand, in a way I understand, Bob, because you listen to that woman, and another thing. And all of a sudden, she's rapping about, Muslims, saying that their ideology is a real hate fest, and then falls into, you're a misogynist. She starts rapping all this hippy-dippy. Not hippy-dippy, but you know what I'm saying. So anyway, Beckel, you blew it bad. You're a woman hater, and you're fired. Get his ass off of Fox while the getting's good. I'm joking, of course, but watch what happens to poor old Bob Beckel. You got to watch it, man. He really got pissed off because she was out of bounds. She said something that was out of bounds, but you can't react that way. She said, you're carrying water. You're a lapdog for the most hateful ideology in the world. And he was seeing red. And obviously he's not having a very good day. And obviously a whole bunch of other stuff. Now, in his dreams tonight, he's going to have her pinned down, and she's going to be going waterboarded. But, you know.
Yeah, maybe they're having a lovemaking session.
Shut up, man.
Yeah, maybe, bud. What a jackball. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show, coming back. Oh, we had a story that went along with this one. A poll, if you'll pardon the expression, says that Bill O'Reilly, Glenn Beck, and Rush Limbaugh are popular, but that most people haven't heard of Rachel Maddow, Keith Olbermann, or Ed Schultz. Ed Schultz. More people are getting the news about the up. According to a political George Washington University battleground poll released on Wednesday, or released on Monday, the poll found that 81% of those polled. Boy, you love that word, don't you?
Well, I mean, it's in a story, you know.
Yeah, but they're all polled this and polled that, you know.
I think I'd get a call from Mr. Hall.
I don't doubt it. The results show that the growing influence the 24-hour cable news has on shaping the political consciousness, despite the fact that network newscasts still draw many multiples of the number of viewers. Whatever. So that's that. We'll get more into that when we come back. Our number, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. And why do chefs on the Gordon Ramsay reality show keep killing themselves? I'm not trying to make a joke here. We've had two chefs on Gordon Ramsay's show kill themselves. Plus, you'll be surprised to hear who scored highest on a quiz about religious knowledge. 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Henry Show.
This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
We got another survey. It's a test. It's another test that Americans took. It's another test that Americans look pretty bad in. And I wonder if there are tests we can give Americans that they would be good at. I suspect that there are. I suspect we could give some tests to Americans that they would pass with flying colors, and I don't mean anything negative either, you know. However... It's part of the modern milieu to bust out these tests.
Hey, here's another one. You know, they can't even find the capital of their own state. And here's another one. Americans here they test America. Where's Canada? I don't know. Ah!
You know, survey tests Americans on religion. Atheists, agnostics scored the highest. America is one of the most religious nations on earth, but a new poll finds that many Americans struggle to answer basic questions about faith, even their own. The Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life released the results of a survey today that tested respondents on 32 questions about a variety of faiths. The questions ranged in complexity from the name of the Islamic holy book to the century that the Mormon religion was founded. Americans, on average, got only 16 answers right. That's a 16 is a C, right? Here's a few of the questions. Can you name the four Gospels? If you said Matthew, Mark, Luke, and Ben, you're right. No, I'm kidding. It's Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. You're among only 45% of Americans who got it right. Well, shut my mouth. Although it is important to know Christianity because it is a part of history. That's why knowing religion, atheists and agnostics do tend to be more educated. They do. Doesn't mean that they're great, doesn't mean that they're marvelous, it doesn't mean they're wonderful, doesn't even mean they're right, but they are more educated. So if you ask them a question like that, they will tend to get the answers correct. Another question, is the Golden Rule one of the Ten Commandments? If you said no, is the Golden Rule one of the Ten Commandments, bud?
Yeah.
Robert?
No, it's not.
Robert's right, you're wrong.
Oh, you,
that's not true. The golden rule.
That's not one of the Ten Commandments. That's not even in the Bible. That's something somebody just cooked up.
What do you mean cooked up? Everybody know about it. Everyone know the golden rule is in a Bible.
No, man. I'm like a preacher made it up.
I don't believe you.
Well, I'll give you points for this, but at least you didn't say I told Robert he got it right because he's black.
I was gonna.
Oh, really?
That's a surprise.
Is the golden rule one of the Ten Commandments? No, it's not one of the Ten Commandments. If you said no, you're among 55% of Americans who got it right. Well, that's, you know, it's more than half. The results of the survey showed that those who knew the most about Christianity were Mormons. They averaged 8 correct answers out of the 12 that were asked about the Christian faith. White evangelicals were second in their knowledge of Christianity, according to the study. What does that mean? White evangelicals? Why did they even bust it out that way? Whites, but then the blacks, what does that mean? These are the things when I'm telling you guys, you read a story and you give me a story that I'm going to do on the air. Why don't you read, you tell me to read the story. Do you guys read it?
Sometimes.
No, you don't ever read it. Because if you would have read that, you would have asked yourself the logical question, well, what the hell does that mean, white evangelicals? Are they talking about black evangelicals? Are they getting it worse? So they're busting it out by race? How about black Mormons? Oh, you mean they don't have any? Never mind. Agnostics and atheists did particularly well in questions about world religions, like what religion is the Dalai Lama and the meaning of Ramadan? Overall, atheists and agnostics answered the most. Jews and Mormons on average answered 20 questions correct. You know what? I no longer have any interest in this story because I don't like that white evangelical thing. Let's move on. I will tell you this much. Religion is important from a historical and cultural standpoint. To actually know something about religion so that you can, quote, respect them, I have a problem with that. I got a big problem with that. It's not my job to learn about somebody's religion. It's their job to teach me. I got a huge problem with any a-hole, whether he's Christian, Jewish, or whatever he is, coming up to me and saying, oh, by the way, my religion says I get to this, 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 and this, so you better give it to me. I got major problems with you there, Jack. Anyway, so enough of these stupid questions about religion. Here's one that is a real mind-blower. Screen legend Humphrey Bogart feared that he was gay, according to a new biography coming out.
Who's Humphrey Bogart, the guy who said, play it again, Sam, right?
Yeah. Well, he didn't say that, but it was from that movie.
He thought he was gay? Ha ha! That's pretty funny. He's supposed to be like Clint Eastwood or something, right?
Well, he was, kind of. He was a He-Man. Yeah, he was a He-Man of the screen and stage and screen back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. Humphrey Bogart. Yeah, everybody knows Humphrey Bogart. That whole thing that he does with the cigarette.
Yeah, he's doing like, you know, say, sweetheart, or however you do it.
Yeah. Screen legend Humphrey Bogart's fears that he was gay almost drove him to suicide. Is that interesting? On the silver screen, he was tough, cool, and sophisticated. In real life, one of the Hollywood's legendary lovers, sexually voracious, habitually unfaithful, Humphrey Bogart had 3 unhappy marriages before he met the love of his life, Lauren Bacall. Now it has emerged that before marrying her in 1945, Bogart had bedded an estimated 1,000 women, including Betty Davis, Jean Harlow, Marlena Dietrich, and Ingrid Bergman, but still he feared he might be gay. Why? Because of that one night with Peter Lorre. Big deal. I'm kidding.
Really?
No, not really. The extraordinary claim has made a new biography of the actor, best known for the movie Casablanca, which is, by the way, on TCM. I recommend it. The book is titled Humphrey Bogart, The Making of a Legend by Darwin Porter. It is due out next month. It suggests that during his second marriage to American stage and film actress Mary Philips, Bogart became riddled with uncertainty that made him impotent and questioning sexuality and even drove him to consider suicide. The biography's author, Darwin Porter, himself a screaming queer, is, I'm kidding.
No, you're going to get in trouble for saying that.
No, I won't. I'm just, it's a little bit of, you know. Biography's author, Darwin Porter, a journalist who worked in Hollywood in the 1960s, says Phillips insisted on openly maintaining her previous relationships, even spending the night before their marriage in 1928 with a friend of Bogart's as a farewell gift. Wow. That's gotta hurt. According to the unflattering new book, Bogart told another friend, if only Mary didn't make it worse. When I can't perform, she mocks and ridicules me. I should never. Well, dude, that's why you can't perform. It ain't because you're gay. It's because you're with some ball breaker, if you'll pardon the expression.
Yeah, she's making all fun of him, like a guy supposed to be good at it.
Yeah, that's good, bud.
What are you talking about, man?
I'm trying to keep it clean.
Would you not spit when you talk, man?
What?
I mean, I know. I got some on me, too.
We got to take a break here.
What about more of the gay stuff?
Oh, well, if you want to read up on the gay stuff here. A transgender student won't be a homecoming king. Oh, shucks. Plus, we'll tell you what may be holding up executions in California. When are we going to start throwing the bodies out the front door around here? We'll find out. 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. I'm kidding about that.
No, you're not.
Phil Hendry.
No, you're not.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Our website is philhendryshow.com, philhendryshow.com. And coming very soon are classic CDs for sale, classic CDs from 1997 forward till 2006. There were a lot of people who never got a hold of our CDs, and we do see them occasionally on eBay and other places like that, so we're going to make them officially available to you through our new online store at our website, philhendryshow.com. Stay tuned for that. Get yourself a backstage pass. Watch our live streaming video. Listen to our live streaming audio. Download the show the next day. Get our podcasts. We got podcasts coming out of our ears and also on iTunes. I don't know whether you want to hear the one on iTunes or the one coming out of our ears. Anyway, so go over there, philhendryshow.com. Now, just to finish up here, bud.
Yeah.
Humphrey Bogart was with some slut, Mary Phillips, and he was very, you know, she was not a nice person, I guess. She's sleeping with all these guys, and it made him feel insecure, so he wasn't able to perform sexually. That don't make him gay.
Yeah, he's Bogart. Yeah, I'd be able to.
He's Bogart in the movies. According to the, quote, unflattering new book, I'll bet you Darwin Porter went out of his way to find some unflattering stuff, huh, Darwin? Huh? Huh? He says that this woman openly maintained her previous relationships. Now, Bogart told another friend, if only Mary didn't make it worse. When I can't perform, she really... Well, that's really great. So there the guy is standing there. He can't seem to get... You know, he's stuck in neutral, as the saying goes. And she's all... And she calls up her stud ex-boyfriend. And, yeah, it's that don't make you gay, Bogey. That's... You may be a very sensitive soul, you know. You probably are, you know, probably a little tired. Maybe you smoke too much. Maybe you drink too much. But you ain't gay. And even if you were, you probably would have been happier than being with that bitch. The author Darwin Porter wrote that Steve McQueen was bisexual and had frequent gay affairs in a biography he wrote about McQueen. And the reason why he called him that is because of the guy's last name. How about that?
He thought he's a queen because of his name?
Yeah. No, I don't know. But that... Darwin Porter is gay and wishes every other actor that he interviewed was himself. I don't know, but the guy obviously has a one-track mind. The book Humphrey Bogart, The Making of a Legend, due out next month, is based on unpublished memoirs and interviews with some of the actor's contemporaries. It suggests his mental turmoil stemmed from his childhood. His father, who was a surgeon, beat him up and split his lip, then stitched it up so badly that Bogart was left with a permanent lisp. I mean, did his father really do that to him? That is an unbelievable story. That's an unbelievable story.
What is?
What is? That Humphrey Bogart's father beat him up so bad, he split his lip and then stitched it up so bad, that's why Bogart's lip was like that.
What? Like what?
You don't notice that he's got that lisp?
Lisp? No, that's why he thought he was gay.
Because, no, he didn't. He says, sweetheart, like that, you know.
No, I don't know that.
You guys aren't old enough. In any event, he had a permanent lisp. He ran away to Broadway, where during the 1920s he found fame and fortune and began his incredible catalog of sexual conquests. When Broadway had around 120 theaters, there were four actresses for every available actor. No one has estimated this before, but it's likely Bogart slept with 1,000 women, mostly at this time, Porter said. So no one has been able to estimate that, but Darwin Porter did. Bogey might have been gay, but he slept with 1,000 women. Bogart married his first wife, actress Helen Menken, in 1926. Porter claims she had a lot of lesbian affairs and she was a real bull dyke and hard on the eyes. No, he didn't say that.
But he did say she's lesbo.
Yeah, he did. And he said
he was keeping score with her, and even that they were sometimes both chased by the same women. Wow.
What kind of butch duck is that, man? He married to that?
He was married to Helen Mencken, yeah.
Helen.
Joan Blondell, an on-off girlfriend of Bogart, said, quote, "The zipper was invented in 1926. Bogey demanded one be sewed into all of his pants. Sex was a lot faster that way. Ha, ha, ha," she said, and then passed out from drink. Some of his seductions were brief affairs. At a party, he was marched upstairs by Marlena Dietrich, it is claimed, and his first attempt to seduce a young Betty Davis was interrupted when her mother threw him out of their home, calling him a slave to your genitalia as he fell off the roof of the house.
Call her a slave to his genitalia?
Who?
Her mother.
No, not her mother.
What are you talking about, man? Talking about Betty Davis.
Your mother said that she was a slave to his genitalia.
No, she didn't.
You talking about Betty Davis?
I'm talking about Betty Davis. Yeah, not her mother. God. Bogart's marriage to Mencken lasted only a year. His second marriage ended in divorce in 1937. Both women, diesel dykes. The next year, he went, I'm kidding.
Yeah, but you did say that Mencken's a diesel dyke.
I didn't say she's a diesel dyke. It said she was a lesbian.
Yeah, what's the difference? I'm probably wearing a nightgown and everything, then on a weekend, it's probably riding a jet ski.
But I love you, man.
What?
On the weekend, she's running a jet ski, huh?
Yeah, man, probably repairing them, too.
Got a jet ski repair shop.
All right, so anyway, the next year, he wed wife number three, Mayo Methot. Oh, this is a great story, who once stabbed him with a butcher's knife. They were known as the Battling Bogarts during their seven-year marriage. The story of the butcher's knife, this is an interesting story, because I read a biography of Humphrey Bogart. Now, get a load of this. Bogart was. He was down on Sunset Boulevard, and he was drinking with Peter Lorre. Now, this is back in the days when Sunset, Hollywood itself, was a little community. So people lived off of Sunset Boulevard, the actors, and they would go down and have dinner on Sunset, and they'd frequent the bars down there. You know, it's kind of like a small town. So Bogart is down, and he's drinking with Peter Lorre in a bar on Sunset, and I guess it was just down from where he lived. He lived up in the hills there above Sunset. In comes to the bar, comes this wife of his, this Mayo.
Yeah.
And
why do they call her Mayo, man? Because she liked Mayo?
Yeah, probably loved the Mayo on her chin.
Okay, bud. Ha, 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 ha.
Yeah.
That looked like she took one off the chin.
All right, shut up. So anyway, Mayo comes into the bar. That's very funny. Mayo comes into the bar with the knife. Bogart's sitting there. He's having a drink with Peter Lorre, and she sinks the knife right into his shoulder. And he doesn't notice it at first. He feels something. He turns, and Peter Lorre is said to have looked at the knife hanging out of Bogart's shoulder and said, quote, "Bogey, you've been stabbed."
He probably said it like, "Peter Lorre, Bogey, you've been stabbed."
That's pretty good, man. Do that again.
Yeah, do it again.
Bogey, you've been stabbed.
Nah, that wasn't any good.
Better than you.
Maybe. Bogart found what Hollywood magazines called true love with Lauren Bacall on the set of To Have, Band Have Not in 1944 and made her his fourth and final wife. It was a happy relationship, although he conducted a long affair with his hairdresser, Verita Peterson. But who cares about that? He's entitled. Bogart died of cancer, age 57, in 1957, and that's when Lauren Bacall ran off with a much, much, much younger stand-in. No, I'm kidding. She loved him.
That's interesting, man. I didn't know that about him getting stabbed like that.
Yeah. She ran in, she stabbed him with a butcher's knife right there in the bar. Now, that's love, man. All right, moving on here. I wanted to get to this, speaking of getting stabbed with a butcher's knife, not exactly, but in the prime of your career, New Jersey chef that was featured on a Gordon Ramsay Kitchen Nightmare TV show killed himself. He's the second contestant from Ramsay's show to commit suicide. Now, this is a very, very bizarre and sad tale. A New Jersey chef who 3 years ago described overwhelming personal debt when he was featured on Gordon Ramsay's hit show Kitchen Nightmares jumped to his death from the George Washington Bridge into the Hudson River. The body of 39-year-old Joseph Cerniglia, whose restaurant experienced a renewal since the show, was found floating in the river on Friday of last week. The New York City Medical Examiner's Office ruled it a suicide. During the series, foul-mouthed celebrity foodie Ramsay would verbally bash down on their bash down on their luck restaurateurs in hopes of getting them back on track. Your business is about to effing swim down the Hudson, the brash Brit berated Cerniglia. Cerniglia is the second person on the ramp. So what's the deal with this show?
Yeah, they get you on there and he tells you what a sack of crap you are. You got to get your act together.
Yeah, he tries to motivate you.
Great. Does this turd have a restaurant in New York?
I don't know.
So anyway, Cerniglia is the second person on a Ramsay television show to commit suicide. The other was a former contestant on Ramsay's Hell's Kitchen chef competition, Rachel Brown. She shot herself. Wow. Calls and emails sent to Ramsay's publicist in London were not immediately returned on Tuesday. Cerniglia owned Campagna in Fort Lawn, New Jersey, about 25 miles west of Manhattan, which he bought in 2006. In 2007, the debt-ridden Italian restaurant was featured on Ramsay's show. During the broadcast, Cerniglia estimated he owed purveyors $80,000. He said, "I'm financially in trouble. My personal debt, wife, kids, mortgage, that's a lot of debt." His wife added, "If this business fails, we'll lose everything." So Ramsay starts ripping into him, saying, "Why did you become a chef owner if you haven't a clue how to run a business?" He criticized the restaurant's large portions, the food quality, and speed of service. He chastised Cerniglia for allowing such a childish atmosphere in the kitchen. Wow. Jim Edwards, the culinary director of Chef Central in Paramus, and a close friend of Cerniglia's for the last 7 years, said he thought his friend benefited from being on Ramsay's show. "I thought he fared well. I was never at the restaurant when it wasn't packed." He said that he thought overall the show portrayed his friend in a favorable light. Well, you can't blame this guy Ramsay, you know.
He's yelling at him and everything.
You don't think, like, telling his restaurant the food bad make him kill himself?
No, it didn't make him kill. Look, I'm telling you right now, there's all kinds of slings and arrows of outrageous fortune that all of us in life have to contend with. We all have to swim in the same water. We all have to do the same dance. Now, that some of us are a little bit weaker, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that some of us just can't seem to hold up as well as others. This is not a stain on our character. This is nothing more. It's a very tragic thing. Who knows what this poor man had to deal with in his life? God knows. You know, probably a lot more than anything the rest of us have had to deal with.
Gordon Ramsay got a restaurant, is the London.
Where's that?
In London.
Yeah, I guess it's in London.
What do you mean, you guess it? Where is it?
It's in New York City.
Why'd they call it the London?
Why'd they call it New York City?
Because it's in New York City. It's called the London.
Yeah. Why'd they call it New York City?
Because they want to call it the London.
Yeah, but why?
So you feel like you're in London. You're in New York City. They call it the London because you feel like you're in London. Why would you want to call it the New York City?
Well, that makes more sense.
Why would I want to call a restaurant? I'm in New York City. Oh, well, I think I'll call my restaurant the New York City. That'll give people a real change of pace.
Yeah, but why do they call it the London?
Because that's where the cat's from, man.
Oh.
Anyway, this poor guy, so he jumped off the bridge, huh? Wow. And then that other woman, that Rachel Brown, she blew her brain. I mean, she did. She blew her brains out. She shot herself. I don't know, man. I don't know. I mean, if your show is a show about people that are having a tough time with life, trying to organize things, trying to get things better, if that's what your show's about, then you're going to tend to have people on there that are struggling with life, right?
Yeah, they're probably on the way to blowing their heads off anyway, right?
I wouldn't say they're on their way to blowing their heads off. I just would simply say they're having a tough time of life. And maybe, just maybe, among the people that come on the show are some very, very fragile people. That's a tough, tough deal, man. I feel bad when I read about that, man. You know, because I'll tell you something, man. You know, people talk about suicide being the coward's way out.
I never believe that. I would be a scared to do it.
Me too.
I agree with you. I agree with you. Have you ever talked to someone who's attempted suicide?
Uh-uh.
I have. They survived. And I said, why? I said, what were you... And they said to me something that never occurred to me in a million years. I said, what? Why did you? She said, I needed the pain to stop. I looked forward to the pain stopping. I looked forward to the hell that I was in ending. I wanted the hell to end. And I don't know why. I mean, when you think about people who kill themselves, you think, well, it's a desperate thing. It's a last ditch thing. But you never think of it in terms of relief for that individual, you know? And,
Can we get more happy? Because...
All right. I just was, reading. I'm sorry. What are you doing?
I don't know. I just don't feel good.
Oh, will you get out of here with the handkerchief? 877-876-PHIL. We'll tell you what's holding up executions in California. When we That's a really good topic, man. They're right after the suicide thing, isn't it? Well, we'll try to come up with something happier than that next. 877-876, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. Phil Hendry.
Phil. Tell you what, bud. In the future, man, do we gotta, you know, have so many suicide and death stories?
Well, it seemed interesting to me.
I mean, I got a guy that shot himself at the University of Austin. I got middle-aged people committing. Why we're not having enough goddamned execution in the state of California. I think this will bring a spring to your step, and I think that you'll enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. It's light. Parents lobby for tougher standards because teens are dying on our freeways. Now then.
You kidding?
Yes, I'm kidding. That's not even the headline. A couple of school notes. In Muskegon, Michigan, one of the great... You know, places. Anyway, some Mona Shores High School students say administrators stole the homecoming king throne from the rightful winner, a transgender senior. Many classmates believe the crown belongs to Oakley Marshall, who was born as Oakley Marie, but who now goes as Oakley Marshall, or Oak for short. Friends have started a Facebook page titled, Oak is My King. Assistant Superintendent Todd Geerling said the issue's simple. The ballot gave two choices, vote for a boy for king, a girl for queen. And in school records, he said, Oakley is still listed as female. Female. The 17-year-old says the gender struggle has been lifelong with sports, family, and friends, even band camp. After years of counseling, Oakley plans a sex change at the age of 18. Oak, an honor student, campaigned for Homecoming King on Facebook, a one-day campaign. The campaign took off, and Oak was overwhelmed by the support of classmates. I noticed that in this story, they do not refer to Oak in either gender. They keep just saying Oak. That's just Oak, Oak, Oak. The campaign took off, and Oak was overwhelmed. We here at Wood TV Channel 8 in Grand Rapids don't want to say whether it's a boy or a girl, because then we'd have to take a stand, now wouldn't we? Last Monday, the principal, Jennifer Bustard, otherwise known as Jennifer Bastard, no, it says that right there.
No, it don't.
It does. No, it's Bustard, B-U-S-T-A-R-D, called Oak into her office. They told me that they took me off because they had to invalidate all of my votes because I'm enrolled at Mona Shores as a female, Oakley said. The teen's mother says she's angry. He was voted for homecoming king in a court. Well, when have parents not been angry? He was voted for homecoming king, and according to the votes, he should have been homecoming king. And it's just sad. It breaks my heart that all these people all vote. Well, how about this, Mom? In life, there are some disappointments. In life, there are some very confusing things that we all have to deal with. Your young son, who used to be your daughter, who is now a young man and will be eventually a fully made young man, has endured and has conquered and is seeing his way through to this gender reassignment, is a great student, has a loving mother, has great friends, and I guess you just don't get everything you want in this world now, do you? I'm sure you understand that for the school it might be a little confusing. A transgendered young man who hasn't quite had the surgery but is enrolled as a female but sees himself as a man, and you do too, that the school is caught in a little bit of a quandary, so maybe you can cut him a break. Just once. Man.
Well, I can see what the problem is.
I mean, give him a break, man. You know, I think that... I think we need to love and respect everybody, man. But, you know, it's hard for some of us to catch up. I say us. It's hard for some people to catch up, especially schools. You know, cut them a break there, Mom, okay? I don't want it. What are you doing, huh? Are you depriving my son of his rights? Well, I understand, but it's not your son. Yeah, I mean, it will be a son, but it sort of is. I mean, I don't... It's how he sees himself. It's how he presents. I just broke his heart, and I'm pissed off. And I, yeah, okay, you're pissed off.
Teacher gets in the car at the end of that day and says, what the hell am I doing, man? Why? What's the point? Freaks. All right, anyway, and I say that with all due love, Oak Marshall tells Wood TV about running for homecoming king.
I thought, hey, why not put myself out there? I have just as much qualifications as anyone else in the school. I knew I had a lot of votes. People were telling me in the hallway, hey, I voted for you, I voted for you. It's the senior class that votes for their representative. It's kind of what they did was taking away the voice of the senior class.
So Marshall says his teachers and friends at the school already refer to him as a male, so why not let him be the homecoming king?
They call me Oak, and they say he and him, his. They let me wear the male tux for band uniform, and they're going to let me wear the male robe and cap for graduation.
His mother tells Wood TV she's upset.
He was voted for homecoming king, and according to the votes, as he should have been homecoming king.
I got you.
And it's just sad. And
yeah, it's terrible.
It breaks my heart that, you know, all these people voted, and it was taken away. It was completely taken away from them.
It sucks. Well, thank you, and
take your stinking paws off me.
We'll be back. Phil Hendry Show, produced by Jason Rance, technical director Charles Wigan, and our screener and associate producer is Dan Northcraft. And for Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard, take your stinking paws off of me. I mean, I'm Phil Hendry. Good night.
Phil Hendry.